We are Rogue Media Sports.
It is the Doomsday Podcast, and Ed has returned from Oxnard, his second trip out there. And we're going to talk a lot about his observations as the day unfolds. But Ed, we're going to begin it today with a guy that you've covered for many years, and I got to know at 103.3 ESPN when he was a host there, and a guy we're both friends with, the great Michael Irvin, and has a unique take on everything, and I think folks are going to enjoy today not only what he says about Dak, but his reflections on Jimmy Johnson, I think, are just priceless, because At an extremely early age, before we knew anything about a Hall of Famer, that's when Jimmy came into his life and was with him for an extremely important amount of time, for about 7 years.
Yeah, and I think I thought he was interesting in expressing some level of skepticism about how forthcoming the Cowboys are being about Dak's shoulder injury. Some of the observations he made watching him go through drills about his mobility coming off the, you know, the dislocated ankle and leg fracture that required two surgeries and limited him to 5 games last season. And then, you know, he talked about Drew Pearson going into the Hall of Fame as somebody who wore number 88 in his honor to some degree, created that legacy that we're seeing now. He talked about CeeDee Lamb and his impression of what he saw from him in camp and what the Cowboys might be up to at that position this year. And then, of course, the ultimate ending was his response to what would have happened in Dallas if Jimmy Johnson had not left after winning back-to-back Super Bowls, and who do you hold responsible for that? Intriguing stuff from the playmaker.
It is very. Let's get right to it. Frito, if you would play the music, sir.
So I was out at Cowboys training camp for my second visit last weekend, and who should appear to my right wearing the NFL Network polo but former Cowboys Hall of Fame, 3-time Super Bowl winning receiver, Michael Irvin, who joins us now. Michael, you've been to both the Bucks camp today on Tom Brady's birthday. Nice of him to invite you on his birthday. And the Cowboys camp in a short space of time. And those two teams start the whole NFL season against one another. So let me ask you about the teams first, and then we'll talk some Hall of Fame stuff, because it's a big week for the Hall of Fame and for the Cowboys organization. But let me ask you first, what were your takeaways about Dak Prescott, and how concerned would you be about your quarterback coming off a huge injury that cost him so much of the season last year, now having not being able to throw in training camp for a length of time as he gets ready for this epic game?
I know everybody, Ed, has been playing it down and saying this is just something minor and they're being precautionary. And I hope that is the gospel. I hope that is exactly the truth. But I am a bit concerned that this thing may be a little bit more serious than they're playing on to. I watched Dak today, right, taking snaps, doing his drops, and then when he died, he still used his off arm. Now, that means you use your off arm to throw that ball 2 yards in front of you. If you can't crank up 2 yards right now, why am I to believe in, you know, 2-3 weeks you can get up 60 yards? I don't know. I'm a bit concerned with him, and I hope and pray. God knows I hope and pray, and I'm going to bend my knees tonight to put a little more hope and pray on it. But I hope it's as minor as they're saying, but I am a bit concerned.
What about overcoming the gruesome leg injury that limited him to 5 games? As you watched him run around, does he look like he's fully recovered, and will he be the same quarterback that he was before, playing that physical style and the dual threat?
And that's what I asked him, talked to him about now. And let me be honest here, because when I watch it, You know, I remember what I was like coming back off of a knee. I remember watching people come back off of certain injuries. And what happens sometimes is your gait changes a little bit. Your gait, you know, you kind of your starts and your stops. Once you get in stride, you're pretty good. I can still tell. I can still tell there's a little oof, just a little oof, just a little bit there, just a little bit. But that really, that may just be that the gaits have changed a little on how you run, because you do run differently after you come back. I know I did even after my knee surgery. So, but I think he's fine in that category, and I think he'll be fine mentally, which is a hard thing, and that's why I say it even at camp. Hey, listen, I don't care what you guys say. I don't know that any player has ever had this kind of pressure, or I called it circumstances and challenges, facing him in his first game. Dak is returning for the first time off that gruesome leg injury you're talking about. Now he's dealing with a shoulder injury. He's on Hard Knocks. They're doing the Hall of Fame game, the Cowboys, and then the opening game of the season. He has to go into, I mean, literally, the Lions' den. It is literally the Lions' den. You have to go play the champions where the champions last marked and dropped their flag in their own hometown to win their own Super Bowl in the first time ever in the NFL. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Dak, you got that great defense because they got everybody back, and they're even adding guys like O.J. Howard that was injured from the year before, and the guy that's quarterbacking that whole shebang is the greatest dude to ever play the game, period, at the quarterback position. There you go, Dak Prescott. Get in there. And you won't even probably throw in the preseason. You just got to wake up and face Dak Goliath. That's a hell of a battle right there, man. That's a lot of pressure. But I love when Dak be put under pressure, because usually he shows up and performs.
And you didn't even mention the $160 million contract he has to live up to.
I don't know how I forgot that, but amidst all of this other stuff, you know everybody is waiting. Everybody's waiting to say, I told you he wasn't worth it. Or, see, I told you he was. So absolutely, man. I just don't know. I was trying to think about it when I was in camp. I was like, man, do you understand the weight that's on them? And that's probably why, even though they can't, they just have to say, it's just some minor, it's something minor. We can't douse the hope of our team right now this early in camp. You know what I mean? So because that would, oh my God, that would put a sad place on the Dallas Cowboys if they announced that Prescott was going to be out for any extended period of time.
I've never known Dr. Jerry Jones to manipulate an injury report or downplay the significance of some player's injury. Come on, Michael, you know better than that. He's always honest in his calculations in that regard.
Okay, I'm just saying.
I'm being facetious.
I know you are. I know. I absolutely know that is absolutely tongue-in-cheek when you drop in that right there. Jerry's going to do what he has to do. And he plays gamesmanship and all of that stuff. But this is going to be insane, man. Okay, and let's go. Let's go ahead. Let's crack the billions of the billions of receptors in our imagination and no longer just play with the millions of receptors in our reality of the brain. But the billions, let's imagine if Dak Prescott goes in there and win that game. Holy moly! Holy moly! Holy moly! Oh my God! It'll be off the chain. Hey, can you imagine if he wins that game? Oh my God, man! Dude, every Cowboy fan that's been hiding the last 30 years from guys like Stephen A. Smith, boy, they will come out hard. It'll be something. It'll be something beautiful to watch. I tell you, I can't wait for it.
Michael, it's Mosley, and it's fun to get to talk to you. And I give you credit, by the way. The vaccinations are up for the Cowboys. I think you caused that. I think you had an impact kind of calling them out. And so some of the numbers, don't try to help the Vikings. The Vikings are at about 64% right now. They're struggling a little bit. But what you said, I think, had an impact. I wonder if you could compare a little bit the whole Dak thing. You got Rodgers, you got Brady, you just saw Brady, you got Russell. You just spent time with him. And you think about Troy, everything's compared to Troy. Like, when you're around this guy, do you think he has that greatness? Ed was just talking about that money and all of that. Does he just strike you as a guy who is up to this? I mean, this is a lot to ask.
Of Dak?
Yes.
Absolutely, I think he's a guy up to it. Absolutely. And I get this, and it's so funny. As I was talking to the Jacksonville Jaguars team just the other day, Monday. And I was talking to them about the writing on the wall. And I had a front row seat when I watched this before, the same thing. Because when I came into Dallas, you know, then the next year, Jimmy and the coach from a college comes in, and we got the first quarterback, the best quarterback, just like that. And I told him, in this game, our game is not just about skill, you know, because we had offensive linemen that people were calling bust. They were calling, I don't know about Tua, I don't know about Nate Newton, all of these things. They were calling bust. But the right people came along and got together, and they became one of the greatest offensive lines ever. What I'm saying is this game, because we have hand-to-hand, man-to-man comeback to win each time. We, as football players, have hand-to-hand, man-to-man comeback. Not many professions have that. You guys don't do it. I don't do it in my profession now. We don't have to face a man hand-to-hand, man-to-man. So skill matters, but also will. You see what I'm saying? When you're facing another man hand-to-hand, man-to-man, will is a big part of it, too. It's skill, it's will, and it is connectivity that brings about a winning team. And that, yes, you can say what you will, and a lot of people have a whole bunch of opinions on the skill. But the will and the connectivity, he ranks off the charts on that. And I say he has great skill. So that's why I believe, yes, it's a lot of pressure, but Dak can live up to all of it because he's great on the three parts that I think makes up great football teams.
So you just basically told Urban Meyer, drawing the parallel of the early Cowboys that you joined, that Urban Meyer and Lawrence are going to win three Super Bowls in 4 years, become the dominant team.
I told them, we went from 1-15 to winning three Super Bowls in 4 years, three short years later.
Right.
They can do it quicker.
Wow.
They can do it sooner. Because back then, we were still fitting quarterbacks in the NFL system. Now, they fit the system to the quarterback in the NFL. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So now, you can do it quicker. And you have to have those elements together, no matter what you do. And I told them sometimes, so when you guys are hanging out, man, you have to be careful. You have to plant seeds and hold each other accountable. I would go to Chucky and say, what do you got? Chucky said, we can hold him to 17. And I would say, oh, we can easily get 28. Now, if we're in the fourth quarter and I'm on that football field and we're sitting over here with 14 points and Chucky and them holding them 10, he's going to look at me and say, that don't look like 28, Mike. Let's go. You know what I'm saying? Let's go. And when you have guys checking you and holding you accountable, you can't let the media start talking about, oh, well, they pointing fingers. No. This man is holding me accountable to what I said. I will deliver the key to winning championships. And the thing that we had back then, they can get it. Each man making a promise, one man to the other, get my job done, and then holding each accountable to that promise.
All right. I wanted to ask you, Michael, about the newest 88, CeeDee Lamb. You were in camp. He's been making highlight catches. What are your impressions of him, and where do you think this can go?
Man, everybody's been talking about how this young man has really taken his game to another level, and I thought he had an incredible season last year. Now you see when I see him posting things, you can see he's put on a little weight, so he's put on some more strength. You know, he knows he needs to get a little stronger inside. He just looks great. And then he's showing up on the football field and getting it done. So I can't wait to see that. I can't wait. And, you know, we're talking about all of this without Dak. He's been looking good without Dak. That's why I can't wait to get Dak back out there. He was going to be on a tear last year if he had gotten more games with Dak. This is going to be interesting. Now, people have been saying it and intimating, and I just don't know, but I can't wait to see because I threw it out. Now, can he take over that number one spot? Are they trying to move him toward that number one spot? Or if it's not even that the question, will Amari Cooper try to rush back off that ankle because of what he's doing in training camp? You see what I'm saying? Because there is a pecking order right now, and as we know it, it has been Amari Cooper, probably CD, and then Michael Gallup. But hopefully they're competing to change that order, because if they're playing like that, they're that hard and competing on the battleground, then they'll do great when they hit the playground on Sunday.
Michael, you had to wait longer than you should have before you went into the Hall of Fame, but your wait was nothing compared to the one that the original number 88 has endured. Drew Pearson going in with Cliff Harris into the Pro Football Hall of Fame this week in ceremonies that you'll attend. They were both undrafted players. They're the first Cowboys players to go in the Hall of Fame after signing and beginning their careers as undrafted free agents. What was it about Drew Pearson that made you want to wear 88?
Man, listen to man. Oh my God. And even listening to that. That right there, your intro says everything. How many times, you guys heard me say it, I measure men on distance travel. You know, I tell me where you started before you tell me, and let me see where you are. And then I should measure you accordingly. To go from undrafted to the Hall is a hell of a journey. I mean, that says everything right there. That gives everybody and anybody hope, man. And it's a hell of a thing. And even to watch it over the years, you know, to watch the disappointment that Drew had, you know, it makes your heart opens up for when he actually goes up there. I guarantee you, people will tune in and there will be a spike when Drew's up there, whenever he's speaking. I'm just so happy for him. And he's the original. He's the original. Well, you can't write the NFL story without it. When you have come up with things, like I always say, when you put up the numbers, you put up the performance, and then you've embedded yourself with some nickname like Greatest Show on Turf, you know, the triplets. This man in the Hail Mary, they come together. The original, man. He's just the greatest. I'm so happy for him. I am so happy for him.
And another man I'm sure you're extremely happy for is your former head coach at the University of Miami and a man you won 3 Super Bowls with in 4 years in Dallas, Jimmy Johnson. Not in the Ring of Honor, but is going into the Hall of Fame. What are your feelings about Jimmy being recognized in this way?
Yeah, it's so happy. I'm so happy for Coach. His coach deserves it. He deserves it. Excuse me. We just talked about his mark. We just talked about it. This man took a 1-15 team, fresh, no NFL experience, in 3 short years, put that team in position and win 3 Super Bowls in 4 years. Come on, man. Enough said. We had people that have been in this league for 100 years before they won their first Super Bowl, and then another 25 more years before they won their second. And Jimmy did it in those 3 short years. No doubt. Just stop it. Put the man where he belongs. I say to Coach, welcome home. Hell of a job. You should have been here.
You were already at Miami before he got the job there. What do you remember? Like, what were your first impressions of him? Because what y'all did was together is incredible. And I've heard you joke that he followed you everywhere. Then he ends up with the Cowboys after you ended up there. What were the what do you remember like thinking of Jimmy when he showed up on the scene at Miami?
Yeah, Jimmy was a lifesaver for me in this sense, man. I think back, Jimmy was new. I got recruited by Howard Snellenberger, right? But of course, never got coached by him. Jimmy took over and came in and took over for Howard Snellenberger. And my first few days there, I'm fighting everybody, getting into stuff. I'm not coming in here to be the freshman that y'all gonna push around. I've been pushed around by them 16 brothers and sisters I have. I'm not having it anymore. You know what I'm saying? I was doing all kind of crazy stuff, man. Fight people here. Jimmy could easily say, "Hey, we get rid of you, boy. He can send you home right now. We get rid of you." But he did not, man. He stayed with me. And he knew I had recently lost my father, you know, and he said it to me. I'll never forget. He said, "Michael, I know. He said, "Coach George Smith, who was my high school coach, told me, you know, that you recently lost your father." He said, but I'm going to be here. I'm going to be here for you. I'm going to be here with you, you know, because, I mean, you lost your father. Howard Snellenberger, he left you. I'm not leaving. I'll never forget. He said, "I'm going to be here for you. And I'm going to be here with you. But we can't be fighting our own teammates." You know what I'm saying? We can't be fighting. He said, I'm going to suspend them. I'm going to suspend them because I want my leaders to know better and not get into this, not get into those kinds of situations. So I'm going to sit him down. But I'm going to say to you now, we can't have all of this. We can't have, you know, and I'm telling you, man, just him reassuring me. Remember when I was upstairs watching film, we're losing. He said, "Everybody's talking about Miami's losing Eddie Brown. Miami's losing Stanley Shakespeare. What is Miami going to do after losing those superstar wide receivers?" He said, "Just wait till I show them Michael Irvin." He said, "Don't let me down." Oh, dude, listen. I'm telling y'all the story, and I'm tearing up right now. I'll never forget that. Oh, my God. No, I watched film. I went and put on that 40-pound vest. I used to run 40 flights of stairs every night thinking about that. I won't let them down. And then my first game against Florida, I let him down. I fumbled. I didn't play well. Fumbled the ball. I thought he was going to bench me and never let this freshman play again. He said, I went in and met with him. He said, "Mike, I told you I'm here for you now. We got to play better. We can't have that. My first college game." He said, "We can't have that. We can't have the ball on the ground." He said, "But I'm going to stick with you one more week. We still here. Don't worry about it." And then, of course, I went down there and did the bang thing to Rice right there in Houston, and it was over. It was over. I was off and running. It was over after that. But Jimmy gave me, quite a few times to make sure I straighten it up and keep it right. And I just appreciate him for that.
Well, he built a whole program around, you know, the charisma that you had and the confidence you played with and the personality you brought to the program. I mean, he coveted that, didn't try to change you. I'm wondering, you know, he like you said, he inherited you with the Cowboys. What was your most memorable Jimmy Johnson story of the two of you in Dallas? And it doesn't have to involve you directly, just what to you, you know, is the ultimate Jimmy Johnson story?
I can tell you what sticks out. And see, it goes back to Jimmy covering with me again. I'll never forget coming back off that ACL. Remember when mm-hmm. I was coming back off the ACL, there were a lot of people talking about, man, Michael may never get back to where he was.
He was already slow. Now he's got a bad leg.
And they were talking about getting rid of me. And I thought that came from our office coordinator, David Shula, at the time, and talking about, well, maybe we'll get rid of, move on, Mike. Jimmy talked to me after that. He said, you know, right before he made the move on the office coordinator, he said, a lot of people are talking about and telling me that maybe I should trade you, you know, that you'll never come back off this knee. He said, Michael, we've had too many times that we have played together and done great things. He said, they're telling me to get rid of you. I'm not getting rid of them. I'm not getting rid of you. I'm going to get rid of them. Don't you let me down. Oh, my God. Let me get this. He knew how to play in your head at the right time. He reached inside your mind, man. God almighty, man. Oh, my God. Thinking about that stuff. That's good. That's something crazy.
All right, here's my very last question, Michael, and I love talking about the 90s Cowboys and getting your perspective on all that. What would have happened, in your opinion, if Jimmy didn't leave the Cowboys after that second Super Bowl? How long would he have coached in Dallas, and how many Super Bowls would this franchise have won?
Yesterday when I told them boys that, are you joking? I said, I won championships on every level, and now the day goes by that I don't think I should have won 5 or 6 easily. 4 in a row, no doubt. Should have won 4 in a row. And then turned around and maybe we let someone get away, then come back and win another. There's no doubt in my mind that's what should have happened. And I wish could have happened. And we look back on it, and you know, Jimmy, and we all talk about it. You can't help but think that you think about those things. I told those guys yesterday, I said, I hear people all the time talking about, well, you know, it doesn't define my career if I don't win a Super Bowl. It doesn't define. Let me get this right. You started off growing up playing in the yard, and each time you did it in the yard, you were talking about winning a Super Bowl. So your childhood dream doesn't matter to you. Stop saying that because you know it's not true. Stop saying that and do what you need to do to get your ring. So you don't have to lie to yourself for the rest of your life. Because I'm telling you, I have 3 of them. And I keep thinking that the 94 that passed in the NFC Championship game, somehow I should have jumped at that ball before Deion trapped me. I should have done. I could be just taking a drive. And that plays a ping. I'm like, it just pop up in my head. Just ping. So don't tell me you're going to play your whole career and be okay with nothing. When I ain't even okay with the 3 I have, I ain't buying none of that.
So when you see Tom Brady with those 7 Super Bowl rings, that photo of him sitting there with the 7 Super Bowl rings, you're like, that should have been me and Troy and Jimmy and Darren Woodson.
Exactly. I wanted to just move it. I wanted to move that thing out. And we thought we had put a good little cap on it. Oh, okay. Let me see somebody go and do that. Tom said, okay, I will. You know what I'm saying? Okay. I'll wait 2 or 3 years twice, I guess. I'll try that. You know what I mean? It's crazy, man. And it makes you wish. I wish I could go back and do it again. I would trade a minute right now to have the opportunity that they have to take a team from 1-15 to possibly getting in the Super Bowl. And there's nothing like that. Now, that's the one thing that I don't know Tom can ever say. Because we were 1-15 to go from that to winning the Super Bowl. That was the greatest moment. That's why the first one is always the greatest one. Because we started it at 1-15. Now, saying all of that, I said this to Jerry the other night at the media party. I said, Jerry, this is a great time, man. It was a great party. It was a great party, man. But we had these parties, and we've been telling these stories for the last 30 years. I said, we need some new damn stories. We need some more Super Bowls because we need some new damn stories, you know.
What did you think of Jerry opening the press conference at training camp and getting all emotional about Jimmy and, you know, basically saying it was his, he basically, for the first time that I can remember, said without equivocation, it was his fault, that it was his job as the owner to make it work and to let it last, and he didn't do that.
And Jerry's what we're talking about right now. You know, when you start looking at time and eternity and you start saying, man, I've had a great run here in time, but even my great run, there's more I could have gotten done. And I guarantee you that you tie that in to what he's been saying when he says, literally, I will give anything to get back there. Anything. He's basically saying, I would give up all the ego thing that went on back. Anything to get back to winning a Super Bowl. And I certainly understand what he's saying. So hopefully, hopefully this injury Dak has is minor, as they've said to us, and we'll get a shot at it this year.
And Jerry would do almost anything to win another Super Bowl. There's one thing he seems unwilling to do, in my mind.
And what's
hire
that?
A football general manager not named Jerry Jones.
Well, okay, but here it is. Jerry's going to say, why, when one named Jerry Jones gave him got three? You see, that's going to be his. How many other guys out there have three?
How many have won them in the last 25 years have won one?
Yeah, they're hard to win. They're hard to win now. You can't Stephen A. me now.
I was just mildly correcting the statement that he made.
Once you open up yesterday, that's history. You got to open up all of history. We can't be saying, well, let's just open up 10 years of history. Only 11 years of history. Let's open up 12 years of history. Well, that ain't history. That's your story. You got to open up all of it. History says it all back there. Everything back there counts. And those three he has count.
All right, we'll give it to you. I'll just say this in closing. I can remember when I covered the Cowboys for the Dallas Morning News. I can remember standing out there on Mondays and thinking, what am I going to write every day this week? And I would go over to Michael Irvin's locker during a media access time at lunch, and I could have written four stories a day for the next month just talking to one guy. And so it's always great to get your opinions and your insights and hear your laugh. And appreciate you joining us on the Doomsday Podcast, and hope you have a great week in Canton and enjoy engaging with all your teammates and family members who wear gold jackets and won rings together.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, man. I miss these guys, man. I go every year, and last year, we, because of COVID, we didn't get a chance to come together. So this is going to be a big year, so we'll enjoy this.
Michael, look forward to seeing you on the road in the NFL this year.
All right, buddy.
Thank you. Hey, thanks, Michael. All right, great to catch up with Michael Irvin, and so much good stuff from him. Ed, we now have two trips between us. Unfortunately, they're both by you to Oxnard, and you had an eventful trip back.
But that means you didn't have to pay for any of my expenses this time because ESPN's taking care of that. Got one of the two already approved. I'm ahead of the game.
I know. You know, I still work for an ESPN affiliate. I wish they would take care of this trip out here. I'm still working on it. But, Ed, after a second trip out to Oxnard, California, and, you know, interestingly, the Dak Prescott thing has happened. We have some news as we record this today that Mike McCarthy has basically said, hey, no setback, but that the Cowboys are going to be very conservative with Dak Prescott. I want to get some of your observations, but I first want to get your take on what you saw from Dak and how you think our listeners, which there are thousands upon, maybe perhaps millions, what they should, like, what's the concern level right now with the Cowboys being very, very conservative about Dak Prescott and when he starts throwing the football again?
So when Mike McCarthy said that at his press conference today, I reached out to some people in the organization and asked, had there been a second MRI that caused them some concern and caused them to decide to be more conservative in their approach to allowing him to throw again? Because when I was out there, McCarthy was talking about he's going to throw in a few days, you know, and he's doing everything but throwing. I mean, he goes in terms of individual work. He goes through everything with the quarterbacks, takes the first rep even, and he'll, you know, you'll see him catch a snap, move around, evade a rusher, and do everything but throw the ball. He winds up, he just doesn't release the ball. And then when the team stuff happens, he's out. He'll stand there and observe, or more often than not, he'll clip in on the resistance cords with trainer Britt Brown, who will put him through some work. So it appears, the good news is, it appears he's able to move well, given the gruesome leg injury that ended his season. That doesn't seem an issue. He's wearing these Johnny Unitas era cleats. I'm sure they're Jordan brand. And so he doesn't look particularly fast, but he seems to be moving fairly well and without pause or hesitation. So back to reaching out to people in the organization, they said that he was reevaluated yesterday. They had a big conversation between the medical people and the coaching staff. And of course, Jerry and Steven would be involved in this as well. And his diagnosis is no different. It's still the strained latissimus muscle. They always thought that it was probably a 2-week injury. And now the prevailing opinion is, you know, they reported his training camp ahead of 30 other teams. Like most of the rest of the league is just now getting into pads. Why rush this thing and create the risk of a re-injury that would put the season opener against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in jeopardy, or might cause it to linger and be an issue throughout the season? And so for those reasons, I think they've opted to just kind of back off a little bit, you know, wait till we never thought he was going to play in the Hall of Fame game. They do want him to play in the preseason because it's been so long since he's seen live game action. And I think there's still some psychological things he has to overcome in the leg recovery in that regard. Like, I think he needs to see a live rush and operate with people falling around his legs and, you know, being tackled and being physical, like the way he likes to play the position. But it doesn't seem like there's serious concern about this muscle injury in his upper shoulder.
Okay. I think the only concern is that he had been cleared, everybody was waiting, and now he can't go. And I think, Ed, I'm with you. I don't think Cowboys fans will be that concerned unless, like, this gets into, like, 2 or 3 weeks of not throwing the football.
If he doesn't play in the game against the Texans, which is their dress rehearsal game, they said today, then I think you start asking a different set of questions, and the concern would grow about his availability for that season opener. But I don't think we're at that point yet. I didn't think he was going to play in these first two games anyway. And the Cowboys are fortunate that they have an extra game. And they do have a backup quarterback situation to sort out now that they don't have Andy Dalton anymore. So this will be a great opportunity for those guys to get reps with quality players around them and see who the backup quarterback should be.
Do you have any experience with you're always good at kind of like remembering who's had certain injuries and who's dealt with similar things. The latissimus, I think I may have had some of that, may have been misdiagnosed at some point. Has the latissimus, do you recall any quarterback that has dealt with that? And has it it seems almost like a baseball thing. You just got a little bit of tired arm or tired shoulder or whatever.
Yeah, they described it as a fatigue injury, right? And so I reached, the first time I was out there, I'm like, well, how could he have a fatigue injury? We're first day of padded practices. He's only thrown for 3 days. And I was told, well, it's all that he did before he got to camp. You know, this guy has this incredible work ethic and drive. And so he threw too much before he ever got to camp. And as I said to somebody, you can't allow a man with that kind of work ethic to have a football field in his backyard. You know, I mean, you're just asking for problems.
That's like us, Ed. Our work ethic is sometimes too much. We take it to extreme.
I'd say that's true of one of the two of us. Possibly.
I think you're looking at him, sir. It is
probably the guy who went to camp twice versus the guy who hadn't been at all.
Buddy, I'm out just raising funding. Okay, it is the Doomsday Podcast, and we are talking about Ed has had two trips out. He was there at the beginning, and then he had a few days, and then he was able to follow up with the Cowboys. Ed, biggest observations from being out there. And by the way, the breaking news today, DeMarcus Lawrence has been cleared to come off the physically unable to perform list, the PUP list, we like to call it. And he will not be in Thursday's game, but he will be able with whatever he was dealing with his back. He'll be able
to start. He had a herniated disc in his back. This is his third back surgery of his career. So I'd say people should be more concerned about that injury than they should be what Dak Prescott's going through right now. And then I think the other injury update was Amari Cooper spoke to reporters for the first time today since camp began. He's also been on the PUP list. He's not been cleared, but he said some interesting things. One is that he has bone spurs in his ankle removed in January, and that caused kind of inflamed another part of his foot that was, you know, had bothered him since his college days at Alabama. But the interesting thing he said to me was, he's down 10 pounds in this camp. He still wants to get down 5 more pounds. So he's going to be down 15 pounds from where he was last year. He's always played at 225. He's looking at playing at 210. And so I think this might maybe be the result of, hey, at the end of this year, it's either you or Michael Gallup on this football team. You know, I mean, CeeDee Lamb's been sensational. He's going to be the number one receiver on the football team, in my opinion, this year.
Already.
So there's your first observation.
Wow.
You asked for interesting observations. That's one.
The number one wide receiver for the Dallas Cowboys will be CeeDee Lamb.
I think CeeDee Lamb will be the number one receiver. And if they have any thought at all that this is Amari Cooper's last year, and they certainly structured his contract so that they could get out of it after this season, he has no more guaranteed money, then I think that's what the direction you want to take CeeDee Lamb's career, right? Right now, you need to come out of this feeling like, no question, he's a number one receiver on this football team if we're not going to bring back Amari Cooper. If you decide to, Michael Gallup is more affordable and you'd rather have him paired with CeeDee Lamb than you would Amari Cooper. I mean, they'll be far enough away from the deal that it's not going to bother them that they traded a first-round pick. They'll feel like they got value over the 3 or 4 seasons that Amari was here for surrendering that pick. And they got put in a bad position. They put themselves in a bad position, quite honestly, to allow him to reach free agency and get the second highest paid wide receiver deal in all of football. He isn't worth that. He has been a very good player, but I think my argument about him as a number one receiver is he doesn't show up in the big games. You know, whenever he's matched up against one of the premier corners in football, he gets shut down. You know, he gets shut down by Gilmore in New England. He got shut down by Darius Slay in Detroit. And so I don't think you'll see that happen to CeeDee Lamb. I think CeeDee Lamb's got more dog in him than Amari Cooper does.
Oh, wow. Wow. Little dog. Boy, like a little bit like Michael Irvin used to have. Ed, I am sort of curious your observations. There's the Kelvin Joseph, Micah Parsons, seeing the Cowboys' first-round linebacker out there. And then Vander Esch and Jalen Smith, the thought is,
again,
both of them could be on their final season.
Right? It's that same scenario where these guys got to play their asses off because their jobs are in jeopardy. And they clearly that message has been clearly delivered without anybody saying a thing, just by the fact that Micah Parsons is playing at every position on the field on defense. Like, Dan Quinn cannot sleep at night because he's coming up with all these new ways to use Micah Parsons on defense. He's going to rush him off the edge. He plays middle linebacker. I think Jalen will probably be more of a pass rush specialist than anything else based on what we've seen to this point. Now, roles are still being defined and injuries can still happen to change the whole equation. But I think one of the most important things with the defense, as bad as they were last year, you would expect these guys to be really open to change, right? I mean, they gave up the most points in franchise history, and the franchise has played football for 6 decades. They were the second worst run defense in football. Only the Texans were worse. So I think these guys are willing to make the change, and I think they've really embraced what Dan Quinn is doing. Dan Quinn is a very hands-on guy. These guys are working harder than they ever worked under Rod Marinelli. They're being pushed, and he's out there, and he's in the drills with them. You know, he's wearing the arm pad. He's holding the ball blocking sled. So he's fully engaged with them in this. And I think there's been a lot of buy-in about that. That's not the way it was last year. You know, Mike Nolan was put in a very difficult situation and fired after 1 year. And it didn't seem like it was that way under Rod Marinelli the last few years either. So these guys are working hard, and I think they love the way they're being coached.
Okay, being coached hard. Excited, you know, that these are very good observations. I love the Werder observation deck. Now, people want to hear Ed Werder's take on some of these rookies. Nashawn Wright, Kelvin Joseph, Obviously, I was hearing Neville Gallimore was he's not a rookie, but he's been around a little bit.
Second year.
I've heard he's doing really well. Who are some of the are any of the rookies other than Micah Parsons starting to step up? And the cornerback, I mean, that's a big deal. It seems like CeeDee Lamb and Diggs are having some pretty
Trayvon
nice back
Diggs.
And forth.
It's not quite yet to the level of Michael Irvin against Deion Sanders in practice that we used to see out at Valley Ranch back in the 90s. But it's competition that should make Diggs better. Like, how many guys is he going to go up against that are better than CeeDee Lamb, more athletic than CeeDee Lamb? Yeah, he's been posterized a few times. Every time you see CeeDee Lamb make some ridiculous catches on Diggs, but Diggs is winning a fair share of those matchups as well. But nobody is going to be able to defend CeeDee Lamb the way he's playing right now with the offense that he's in and the talent around him. That's why I'm predicting such a huge season for this kid. I mean, he set Cowboy rookie records, and he played with four different quarterbacks last year. He only played five games with Dak Prescott. But Diggs is a very physical guy. Dak Prescott loves his mentality, his attitude. He talks about, you know, he gets into it with Dak, you know, from day one, talking about, I won that rep, I picked that ball, and, you know, the whole deal. Very physical type player, emotional player. I thought he was terrific his rookie year for the most part. He got beat sometimes, but he also led the team in interceptions with three. And what did he say? I went back and looked at every play I was on on tape, and I had my hand on the ball 14 times, and I only got three interceptions. I should have had 14 interceptions. So this is a guy who's pretty determined to improve in year two and take that quantum leap. And beyond him, I would say Kelvin Joseph's been, you know, a physical guy. Hasn't stood out like Diggs has. The other guy, the guy who's, of all the draft picks, probably the only guy whose name I can't pronounce, Osa Odige Uza? Close? The UCLA defensive tackle? Mm-hmm. He's kind of a penetrating guy, a good athlete, not your classic, you know, sloth in there at defensive tackle like they had last year with Dontari Poe. But a real good athlete. I think that's a guy.
A non-sloth.
That's a guy that Dan Quinn wants to see a lot of in these upcoming preseason games. So a guy to watch.
Yeah, that is going to be good. And I think everybody was waiting to see kind of what you would think out there. Did you have any interaction with Jerry? Did he get emotional seeing you? He opened the camp with a very, very emotional. I think he broke down about three times.
Right.
Has Jerry been pretty ever present out there? What were your interactions?
Yeah,
with him?
I mean, but it's not, you know, quite the same because of the COVID restrictions. I mean, it's great that they're having training camp. There are fans there. The media can observe, but we're in a fenced off area. And so, you know, last time you and I were both out there 2 years ago and we did all those interviews, that opportunity doesn't exist. You can't just walk on the field and go interview whatever players you want to anymore. It's the Cowboys designate four guys or whatever, and they come, you know, stand at a lectern or whatever on the practice field, and you're on the other side of the fence. So at least you're making eye contact with them. You can, you know, read their body language and they know you're there. They know you've made that investment. But it's not back to normal yet, just a lot closer than it was. You know, McCarthy does his press conference and the chairs are all, you know, spaced out 6 feet apart, and they were perfectly placed according to COVID protocols in the NFL the first day. And then Jerry walked in and walked away from McCarthy and Steven and walked right in the middle of all the media people and was, you know, patting Brad Sham on the back and shaking hands with, you know, Clarence and all that. So Jerry instantly violating the protocols at the very first opportunity, which is a surprise to no one. But yeah, Jerry's out there, but we haven't been able to engage with him quite as often as we normally would.
Do you get the sense that this Dan Quinn hire is the, if this team is to win the division and make some noise this season, will that be like, is that the huge X factor for this team? I mean, like how much Dan Quinn talk is there? And I found it interesting that you said that the players seem to be really responding to having him. I mean, it's not like Marinelli was like the easiest guy to play for, but I would say Dan Quinn, he may have more credibility with where he's been in the NFL. I don't know. Both of them have credibility. I just wondered what Dan Quinn's impact you feel like is going to be on this team.
Well, I think Jerry Jones has said multiple times that the biggest offseason acquisition we made was a free agent coach, Dan Quinn. And you know, DeMarcus Lawrence said today, quote, he's bringing the swagger back to this defense. And Anthony Brown said he puts responsibility on you. He holds you accountable. He's not taking no for an answer, not taking no half-assing. He wants you to work and put your heart into it to see it on film. That's what I love about him. He's very detailed. So that's what I'm talking about, that level of embracing this new philosophy. The other thing I've liked about Dan Quinn is he said, hey, there's some guys who have to prove it here, right? We're coming off a horrible season, this franchise is on defense. And, oh, I have to prove it because I got fired in Atlanta. You know, I got to prove I can coach in this league again because I got fired in Atlanta. And he, you know, we all know he blew the 28-3 lead against Tom Brady and the Patriots in the Super Bowl. He'd have as many Super Bowl rings as Mike McCarthy right now as a head coach. But that's not what happened. But I think he's a guy with real conviction. I think he has great people skills. I think he knows how to motivate people. I think that's apparent already. And I think he knows how to call defense. And you know, Mike Nolan was put in a bad spot, like I said, trying to make the change that he did, and the timing was all wrong because they didn't have training camp on the practice field. They didn't have preseason games, and it was an epic disaster. And he paid for it with his job, and it wasn't all his fault. I'll say that, first of all. But I think there's a lot of pressure on Mike McCarthy to get this hire right, because last year they made him fire the guy who brought him into the league, his defensive coordinator, Mike Nolan, after 1 year. There's not going to be any reason not to consider Mike McCarthy being fired if this team does not win this year, unless there's extenuating circumstances like the injuries that they had last year, where you have four different starting quarterbacks and 15 different offensive line combinations. Nobody's going to win in that situation. But he made bad hires on his staff. He badly managed several games that they lost. And so I think there's a lot of pressure on him. Jerry's fired a coach after 2 years before. He fired Chan Gailey after 2 years. He regretted it. Said it's one of the biggest mistakes of his career. So I think there was that level of pressure on Mike McCarthy and maybe Jerry. I'm sure Jerry was involved as to who the next defensive coordinator is going to be. And I think this guy makes perfect sense. He's from the Pete Carroll system. You know, Chris Richard was here. He coached the same system. So the players should be somewhat familiar with it. It should have some similarities to what they did 2 years ago. And the other thing I liked about it is, you know, he typically does not flip corners, but he has in practice been flipping his corners. And the reason he's flipping his corners is because he wants Diggs to be able to match up with whoever the best guy is in certain situations. He feels like they have totally changed the personnel on the defensive side of the ball for the better. You know, they've got speed, they've got length, they've got guys who have a history of creating turnovers. And that's what he wants to coach. And the other thing he said is, you know, all these personnel packages, they're going to be a big defensive substitution team because of the versatility of the guys he has. He's trying to create roles for everybody. And he said, my goal is to create a role and give this guy however many plays it is, but whatever role he has and however many plays he's on the field for, he's totally convinced he's going to win. He's going to win that rep in a game. So that's what he's trying to build.
All right, and Keanu Neal is someone he's brought in, and this is going to be a really interesting defense to see where it is. Ed, were you, you know, for people that have not been to training camp, some of our listeners have been out there. You and I always really enjoyed going to Andrea's Seafood and eating out there by the water in the bay. Was that weird? Going out there without me, was the food not as tasty without me there? What was that like?
Well, you should be reassured to know that I went there three times and all three times by myself. So I saved a place, an empty chair just for you and just in case you showed up, because it's our place. So I love, as you know, the mahi-mahi, grilled mahi-mahi sandwich. Comes with, you know, lettuce, beautiful red tomato, summer tomato, very sweet, onion, little tartar sauce on there. The first day, so it had been 2 years since I'd been there, and I couldn't remember exactly what I had. For some reason, I thought it was halibut. I didn't see halibut as a sandwich on the menu. And so I said, I'll have the mahi. And she thought I said ahi.
Oh,
so when I went to pick it up, it looked wrong to me, but I wasn't sure why. It was okay. And then I looked on the receipt and it said ahi. And then I was like, aha, ahi. They didn't give me mahi. They gave me ahi. So, yeah, it was great. It was great. But yeah, we definitely, it's definitely a better tasting sandwich when you're around.
That little marina with the ice cream spot right around the corner. And then there's a grilled cheese place. It's something I miss. And how much longer are they out there? I still think I might.
They're next week's their last week.
Okay.
They come back from Canton, and then they go to Arizona at the end of that week. They have a practice against the Rams a week from Saturday. And
I'm kind of interested.
But once they go to Arizona on the 13th, they come back home.
I'm kind of interested in that practice.
Go ahead.
What if I just go out there for one practice? I like that. Just kind of have them all to myself.
Go for it. I think you should. I mean, pretty soon they're going to be back at the Star, so we can go out there anytime. We can get credentialed. There's a limitation on credentials still.
I think it
may be forever.
I think that's true. All right. It has been the Doomsday Podcast. And Ed, good stuff. Are you going to take one more trip out there? Would you like a third trip? Should the Doomsday Podcast go cover the Rams practice? What do you think? I mean, if we somehow come into a lot of money.
I'm always interested in going to talk to Sean McVay and watching. I'd love to see Matthew Stafford in that system and Aaron Donald. I think they're going to be a really good team in the NFC, but they play in a very difficult division to win. They had that experience last year. You know, the Cardinals were good. They were 6-3 in the best offense in football at one point with Kyler Murray, tailed off at the end. And then Seattle winds up winning the division out of nowhere. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in that division. But yeah, I'd love to go back out to have another fish sandwich and have you sit in that empty chair opposite me at Andrea's. But I think the greater likelihood is we'll maybe go see the Cowboys play the Texans in about 2 weeks, because that'll be the game where maybe we see Dak Prescott under center and see if he's willing to run and see if all the concern about his arm is legitimate or not.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds, and really good stuff. Ed, great job getting Michael, and it's not always easy to pin him down, but once you get him, it's a lot of fun, and so a lot of great stuff from Michael Irvin. For Frito Nation Productions, for Mark Frito Friedman and Ed Werder, it is Matt Mosley. Good night from Allen, Texas.